The AFEM Industry Insider is brought to you by This Is Distorted, the world's biggest producer and syndicator of electronic music programs and podcasts. For more information, go to thisisdistorted.com or at This Is Distorted on socials. On air, on demand, on brand. This is Distorted.
This is the Industry Insider from the Association for Electronic Music.
The AFEM Industry Insider.
Hello and welcome to the AFEM Industry Insider podcast. I'm Finlay Johnson, the CEO of the Association for Electronic Music, and today's episode comes from one of our live working group calls titled From DJ Set to Live Show, Building a Scalable Live Performance. This is a really interesting conversation about one of the most significant transitions I think an artist can make in electronic music, from taking their DJ sets to a fully realized live show. I think it's a step that opens up new creative territories, new venues, new audiences, new revenue streams. But it's also complex and it's expensive, or it can be expensive, that the artist and their team can take on. And there can be things that catch a lot of people out. So we decided to host this conversation with some people at the sharp end of what this actually entails, with different perspectives, who are living this on a day-to-day basis, to hopefully provide a little bit of a guide and provide some education on where to go right and where to avoid going wrong as you take that step from DJ set to live show, and keeping it sustainable, because that's ultimately what AFEM wants to achieve, is more live shows, more DJ shows, and finding their audience. So I'm joined by four practitioners today who work in this world. Tom Kane, a musical director who works with artists at his company, A Work in Progress. Kelly Money, an artist manager at Little Empire Management. And Pete Jordan, a promoter at LWE, one of the UK's leading independent promoters. So we're covering the full chain from creative development to artist management, and then the booking and promotion to go from the DJ show to the live show. So let's get into it. Tom, welcome to the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do on a day-to-day basis, first of all?
Yeah, sure. I'm Tom Kane. I run a company called A Work in Progress. We do music direction mostly for live electronic music. Our artists in cycle at the moment are Arlo Parks, Near Archives, Gorgon City, DJ Seinfeld. So there's a good spectrum of electronic leaning stuff, and taking people, if they may not be in an electronic world, will often guide them through the process of figuring out what their identity is as a performer, to be able to perform with more electronics and more tracks and more synths and that kind of thing. So we kind of get everything ready so that you can then go and take it out on the road, ideally.
When do you first come on board? Is it at the very beginning? Do you get given a brief? Like, how early are you part of this process?
Ideally, we're in at the very beginning. You know, everyone's different. Every project is different. So it sometimes depends, you know, are you doing a very high concept thing? Then maybe you would have talked to like a creative director and a show designer first, or, you know, often we're one of the first people in the process. We prefer to be that way, even if you want to figure out what it looks like before what it sounds like. Like, it helps us a lot just to kind of be part of that journey creatively, so that we can help artists make those decisions about, you know, where are they moving, where are they going, like, what are the right synths? Because as much as, you know, a profit will be good for one thing, it also may not be good for what you were looking for, because actually you need a 303. Like, you know, we help with all those kinds of decisions and figuring out the most practical way to achieve an artist's vision.
And that, you said the most practical way, is that something that you run up against? Like, do you have artists where their creative ambition is bigger than the practical reality in terms of venue size, for example? How do you manage that kind of creative vision with the reality of actually touring it in terms of the cost and the crew size and the technical rider?
I think that that's a common experience for everybody working in the music industry, providing any sort of service to an artist. There's always going to be a point where the way that you can execute something and the creative need to intersect. And I think that's kind of the bit we're always working towards, is like achieving that in the highest quality, best way that best achieves it. And that's, I don't think there's ever any shame in saying, well, look, we're, at the moment we are only doing 250 cap venues, so we can't have XYZ, right? We need to find, often you find a lot of innovation in going, well, I need to DIY that a little bit. What can I do to get, you know, my light show a little bit better, or my visuals a little bit better, or whatever it is. You know, these are all still really great creative things that artists can be engaging with. And, you know, whether that's us helping them or them doing it on their own or whatever, you know, making sure that you're doing something that you can repeat. You know, that repeatability, it's all well and good doing one big spectacle, but then what happens after that? Do you know what I mean? Like, can we take that spectacle and do it four nights on the trot? Like, is that sustainable? You know, once you've gone and done the whole thing is exclusively pyro for 90 minutes, you know, is that a practical thing to do? So it's always good to have an idea of the scope of what everybody can, what everybody thinks the journey is going to be, you know, where is it going next? Because then we can plan and create a practical roadmap and go, okay, well, look, we may not have that thing that you really want now, but maybe by the time you get to the Brixton Electric show, for example, that becomes much more realistic. So I think that there's lots of ways to approach it, and every artist is different. So
you talked about that practical roadmap there, and I'm interested at how long that takes, because I think, you know, there's often a long lead time in securing the right venues. Even before you get to booking the venues, what does the process look like for rehearsals for a live electronic show? And like, are there aspects of that that get underestimated in terms of the planning and the rehearsal time that's needed?
I think when people are new, it's common to underestimate how much time you're actually going to need. And there's, when you haven't done the process before, there's always these little niggles that you can't really plan for. Things like, you know, just programming the stems. It turns out your stems are all wrong. I'm sure anybody who's done management before will be very familiar with how much of a nightmare it can be to get stems just correct. And there's all these kinds of things that you need to account for in the process of putting the show together. And then the amount of rehearsal time you actually need to be able to remember things, you know, like, I'd say that there's a broad spectrum, especially in electronic music, of where people come from when they find themselves in it. And some people are, you know, have grown up as players who've played in lots of bands and, you know, been out playing instruments every single night. And there's some people who've come from maybe more of a DJ and a producer background, where that is not quite as a familiar experience for them. So they can underestimate those rehearsals a lot, and that maybe they're going to need two or three more days just to really lock those parts in. And that's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's whatever gets you to the point that you need to get to. Unfortunately, an electronic show often looks a lot more slim down. It's normally like between one and three people. So you can do it in a much smaller space than you can some of the bigger pop shows that I've done in the past, where, like, you know, our studio in London, we do a lot of our programming and rehearsal here for a lot of our artists, because we only have sort of one, two people to deal with, which means you can do things much more efficiently. But that's not the case all the time. You know, once you start adding like a drum kit and things like that, it's like, well, now we're going to need to start having a proper rehearsal room. We're going to need proper audio. Cause you know, you want to get that right. If you're going to do it, get it right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. You talked about that kind of, I guess you're talking about scalability there and growing the show. I think that's led perhaps to a growth in these sort of hybrid type live setups. Mm-hmm. I know they can be kind of controversial. Like, what's your take on the validity of that? Because I think electronic music sometimes wrestles with the concept of what is live and what that might look like. Do you have any thoughts on where the line should or shouldn't be marked in terms of this is a live show, this isn't, or is everything up for kind of individual iteration depending on the artist and their creative vision?
For sure, I'd agree with you that it is ultimately the artist's vision that needs to drive this decision-making. My personal opinion is that you can either DJ or you can do live. And I think you should keep those separate. And mixing them is not necessarily a responsible thing to do for your fan base or for you artistically, because once you're moving into this live world, like, that's you becoming a headliner, right? That's you saying, here is what I am, and here's what my narrative, and here's what my voice is as an artist, and here's what I'm trying to say, and I'm going to present it to you. Whereas in a DJ set, you can be much more dynamic in terms of being able to be part of a lineup. You know, like, the art of the warm-up set is still relevant as a DJ at any point in your career, as well as like defining that between peak time and whatever, right? Like, we still have a deep respect for that part of the craft for these musicians and these artists. And I think your live show should become an opportunity to say, like, here I am, here's what I mean. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's something that you, I don't think you can necessarily achieve it as much with DJ sets, because you do need to play to that environment, to that club. Like, you know, a set that you play at, you know, Fold is going to be very different to a set that you play at Coco. So like, you're taking all these things into account all the time, I think.
And I guess what you're saying is there shouldn't be there's not an access point issue with live shows. You can start at 200 cap venues and have it small and grow it from there. It doesn't need to be, you know, the Justice live show for it to feel like a real creative endeavor, right?
Yeah, it's always going to be a lot of work, and it's always going to take time to get to the point where it's done. I mean, the joke with a work in progress is that we called it a work in progress because all live shows are a work in progress. they're constantly evolving, and you're always moving on with stuff, and you need to be changing based on the music that you're making, and that you know, a new piece of gear will be released that will be perfect for the show, so you're going to try and incorporate that to it. But yeah, it's an opportunity to do something very different that you can't do with any of your other offerings, particularly in the electronic space. And there's nothing wrong with doing it in a way that's sustainable to start off with and slowly growing. And you're going to learn a lot along the way. You're going to really understand what it is you want to achieve as an artist in that space. And you have to do it loads to do it. I find that a lot of our artists who DJ a lot, they're very comfortable with DJing because that's what they do day to day. And the live show then becomes a little bit, you know, it can be uncomfortable and intimidating, and it's because it's not the thing that you're doing every weekend. And so you haven't quite figured out what it is and who you are in it. And it's got a bit of another layer of complexity, right? Because you're all of a sudden you're like, well, I probably need a tour manager. You know, Swim is one of our artists who I really respect for that, where he has just gone out and he's just like, I'm just going to fucking do it myself. I'm just going to go and get it done. And like, I'm going to learn how to set it up. I'm going to learn how to program it so I can add tunes and stuff. That's brilliant, right? And, you know, he's working hard to get those shows on the road, in the same way that at some point he would have had to work hard to get a booking as a DJ and get those DJ shows out, you know?
And within that kind of process, and it sounds like you're sort of, you're birthing the creative vision of the artist collaboratively, do you find yourself having to push them out of their comfort zone and say, this is, sounds a bit too close to your DJ show? What about this? What about that? And adding in different components to make it a substantially different show to what their DJ show might be that they're doing, you know, every week.
I'd say that we're not doing our job properly if we're not pushing an artist at least a little bit. And, you know, that's met with a broad spectrum of, you know, acceptance and whether people are comfortable with that or not. But I do think you should present all the sides of yourself. Like, artists aren't two-dimensional. Like, they've got all these quirks and all these things about them that are really brilliant. And we need to be showcasing those and highlighting those in as many different ways as possible. And that's from the narrative in the promo. That's in the album artwork. That's in the way the album sounds. That's in the way, you know, are you doing club tracks as opposed to albums? Like, what's your whole thing, you know? And I do think that live performance is one of those places where you can show that third or even fourth dimension of who you are as an artist and push things that maybe you couldn't in other spaces. So yeah, man, like, try something that makes you feel slightly uncomfortable, because you may end up finding, that's bringing out one of the best parts of me as a performer and as an entertainer and as an artist.
That's great. Thank you so much, Tom. Next, we're going to speak to Kelly Money from Little Empire Management, someone that I think is tasked with turning this into a reality often. Kelly, welcome to the call.
Hi, thank you.
As a manager, you're often the first person that has to decide whether an artist is ready to take the step. How do you make that call? What does that mean in practice? And like, what is that kind of, the early stages of that conversation with the artist look like from the manager perspective when you think there's a live show there to be created?
Well, I think there's many factors involved with whether an artist is ready to take that step. I think they need to have catalogue. Obviously, the live show is not just a DJ set. It's you focusing on your art, presenting your art, your artistry. And you obviously need a catalogue. You need to be able to stand up there for an hour and play your own music, basically. So, you know, that's the first thing. Financially, I mean, this is one of the most difficult things, I would say, with playing live. It's very, very difficult. It's very difficult. And I think especially for someone who's a DJ to then go into live, you know, it's not like a band who's always played live. They've always, you know, they've been used to earning no money and they've like built and built and built kind of thing. Whereas it is difficult, I think, sometimes for DJs who are used to a DJ career where, you know, it's pretty profitable going around just being a DJ. You know, you don't have the, you know, you can make quite a, you know, considerable profit as a DJ. There's not all these live costs. And then to go from that to now, you know, putting on a live show, which isn't just, you know, those live dates, it's the months of rehearsals. It's all of that time that's taken out of your earning schedule. It's not a small thing. And I think going from having to decide whether you want to invest in your career, invest financially, and also, you know, get used to not earning money for 6 months, maybe through the rehearsals and then the actual tour itself. So it can be very challenging. And yeah, so I would say financially, you need to be ready, ready for that.
And speaking of the finances, do you think there's enough awareness about the risk involved when you perhaps do go live? So for example, at a Ministry of Sound DJ set, you have an audience that are perhaps wanting to visit Ministry of Sound because of the club. Whereas if you're doing something in Village Underground or Coco and it's a live space, you have to sell the tickets as an artist. Like, are you able to have that conversation with artists? And do you think they understand the challenges around that?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. That's obviously the other thing that you need to look at to determine if you're ready. Like, have you got a fan base who you can rely on to actually buy tickets to see you? Not to see you on a lineup at Fabric or you on a festival lineup or you, you know, playing as part of an Anjuna Deep lineup, for example, where you're used to playing in front of 10,000 people, but those people have bought tickets for a big Anjuna Deep lineup, not for you specifically. And I think, you know, it's important for everyone involved to make sure you do have that hard ticket value. You know, and obviously this is something that you discuss as a team. You know, obviously ultimately the manager is at the top of that structure, stood next to the artist. But, you know, this is a conversation that you'll have with your agent and, you know, making sure you're ready and the promoters and making sure, you know, you're ready to go into that space. And I think there's also an obligation to provide something special for the fan. You know, like live tickets normally cost more money, you know, you're asking the fan to spend that money just to see you. So it's like, you know, you need to make sure you're giving them something special. It can't just be the DJ set with, you know, some extra lights or something. It need, you know, I think there is an obligation to make sure you're doing something of value to the fan because they're investing in you when they buy that ticket.
And I also think you'll probably have to not be in the market 6 months before. You can't be doing your quarterly DJ set residencies because people have to have the demand to want to spend that extra money, right? And go and see something that's a little bit different.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's so much planning that goes into setting up a tour, like strategically. And you're right, you know, starving the market of you so that basically if the fan wants to see you, they have to wait for the live show. You know, that's the ticket they need to buy. So, and that's another thing that, you know, can affect you financially as well. If you have to stay out of your key markets for six months or a year, to make sure that, you know, the fans have to buy a ticket for that show.
And when, you know, if you were speaking to a young manager who is managing DJ clients right now, and they want to expand that to get into, you know, live acts and art, electronic artists that want to do live shows, What are the kind of team members that make up that? How do you coordinate as a manager? Do you have like weekly check-ins? Do you build a structure around it? How do you make sure that you have the right people around you to produce a live show?
I think it all starts with the artist and the creative and the concept. Obviously, it starts with like, why are we doing this? What are we trying to do with this next step? And normally when I've done this before, it's normally been around, you know, you've got a big album coming up and it's like, what are we doing around this album to present this album to the fans, but also, you know, this is an opportunity for us to grow as an artist. It's an opportunity for us to show a deeper level of artistry. So it's, you know, it's twofold. It's it's timing for marketing to promote a concept and to promote a body of work, but also then that feeds back into the artist profile and the, you know, the leveling up of the artist and doing something new. So definitely it starts there. Like, why are we doing this? When do we need to do it? What's the idea? What's the concept? There's so much preparation from the artist side then, and Tom already touched on it, but just how are you going to perform it? How do you take this studio recording and actually translate that into something live? And who's involved? Is it just you? Do you just need to prepare like live stems, for example, and then you're just kind of triggering these things, or you might be playing keys or doing some vocals or whatever it is? Or, you know, do you need other people to help create something live? You know, do you need another vocalist? Do you need, you know, whatever it is? And I think it kind of all has to start with that. And then once you've got your idea, you know, obviously there's the agents, you know, the agent needs to get involved and you're like, look, we've got an album dropping here. We want to do live touring to support the album. Here's where we want to perhaps do it. And then it's about like looking for the right venues, the right promoters. Hopefully you already have a relationship with a promoter who, you know, is already invested. Like, you've probably already have a relationship there where you've been like building together. And, you know, definitely when we've had the most success with this, it's because we're working with promoters that we already have that relationship with. They're there to help. They really want to help, you know, build the artist and be involved in that long-term growth. And, you know, agents are just so important with finding the right venues, finding the right, you know, size of space. Also, you know, the venue is so important because it can be a game changer financially. If you go into a venue that's, for example, already got the screen and, you know, the amazing lights package already or whatever it is, as opposed to you going into a venue that's just a box, that, you know, it's an absolute game changer financially and in terms of being able to like deliver a concept. So, you know, yeah, start with the creative concept, then you actually need to plan the timeline. When are we doing it? Which venues are we going into? And then I would say next step is probably bringing in the you know, the creatives and the production team and figuring out how do we realize this vision. Like, you know, because I think we touched on it before, sometimes the artist has some crazy idea of what they want to do. And in reality, quite often you need to pull that back. You know, it's like, you know, it's just not logistically possible, or you need to be clever with it. And some incredible production people out there who'll be like, maybe we could do it this way, or instead of screens, let's bring a drape in and let's, I don't know, you know, there are ways to get around certain things. And, you know, you definitely need advice in terms of the technical setup as well. I mean, we've had artists who, they want to bring the prophet. They want the prophet on the stage. It's cool. We love the prophet or whatever. And, you know, the production guy's like, yeah, but you're only using it for that little bit in that one song. And like, think about when you have to travel around with the prophet and, you know, and sometimes the complexity of what artists want to do on stage, it adds difficulties. Like if something goes wrong, or, you know, it's just, and there's a lot of people out there who can really help to advise on this stuff because they're doing this stuff every day, you know, have a great production team, you know, someone who's used to doing this. You know, there are ways to, there are some really fantastic crew people out there who, you know, do TM, PM and sound, you know, you can think about clever ways to like build a team, but I would say getting people involved as early as possible, also something that Tom talked about, because before your ideas get a bit too crazy, I think. And, you know, I think the manager's job is to help the artist realize their creative vision, but you need to, it needs to be a way that works. And there's always that, I guess, there's a tension between the art and logistics and reality, yeah, what's possible. And I think the artist, the manager's role is to be that person in between all of that, try to manage an artist's expectations and put a fantastic team around the project, because it's crucial and everyone's so important in the puzzle. You know, the promoter, the agent, the production team. It's crucial that everyone's working together.
In some respects, I think you have the hardest job, because if you pull your role down to its core responsibility, you have to make sure the artist can make a living from their art at the end of the year. And something like a live show might pull away that profit margin that means that they don't need to take a second job or can afford to take time out for family, all those kind of aspects. There must be a push and a pull between this will help your career and raise your profile versus this will actually help you, you know, still keep going financially and into the next year. And I wanted to end on, I guess, a question around that push and pull, and also the concept of live and the way that I asked Tom. I think about some of the like Fortet's live show, which is very visually arresting, but I don't think anyone's looking necessarily at what's being played there because of the audiovisual. Do you encourage artists to think about live in the very loosest possible terms, in terms of involving lighting and sound and interesting stage setups? Or do you think it is about the audio and how that sound is created and delivered to the audience?
I think it's all important. I think even with, I know you asked the question earlier about DJ sets and hybrid sets. I think with the way DJing is now, there's also an expectation, even if you're just DJing and you're presenting your album show, for example, there's an expectation to be doing more than just DJing. I think the lines between electronic performance now is blurring a little bit. I feel like traditionally DJ sets were just like, you know, you're in a booth in a club and like, you know, people are not necessarily going to watch something, but you know, the way it is now, even a DJ set, I think there's a pressure to bring visual, like live elements, you know? So I think in all cases, even when we're not specifically transitioning into a full live thing, we're definitely encouraging our artists to do more than just play music. So I think the visual side of things, the production, is becoming more and more important, not just for the live show, but for a classic DJ set as well. I think there's more expectations now than ever on artists to deliver a show with a concept and lights and smoke and, you know, whatever else. So definitely, I think it's all important. I think visually, it's as important as delivering the audio on a live show.
And I also think there's probably a reaction against that. There's a kind of yin and yang, and you'll get the growth of underground spaces where there's no phones and there's no visuals, and it's about the atmosphere. So I think there's probably an aspect to where the scene is self-balancing, and you're seeing a rise in an audiovisual live experience, and then also club escapism, if you like, I want to call it.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, let's speak next on the podcast to Pete Jordan, a promoter at LWE, who is responsible for selling tickets to these experiences. Pete, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
You're talking to an agent. It's an artist you've booked before, but they are offering you a live show. How do you feel about that? Does your heart sink? Or are you thinking, yes, this is going to be something new to sell? What is it that you're evaluating when you're being offered that live performance show?
I think early on as a promoter, I suppose during the noughties, when DJs have started to sort of come out as doing more kind of hybrid kind of presentations, bringing vocalists, having visual elements, and we could start to see sort of a demand for something a little bit more, you know, engaging in terms of audio visual. It was an interesting one because that was usually quite simple, but suddenly artists started coming properly live as such. And I think what everyone's discussed so far is what actually is a live set. I've seen things called live sets, which are just a DJ set. And I've seen some really ambitious live projects, which are the real thing, as demanding as any sort of 4 or 5 piece guitar band. Sometimes even more complex, especially because of the additional production. I think by the time the US really picked up on EDM, there had to be this something a little bit bigger than just the DJ in the corner of a room. So the essence of sort of clubs has changed, and there's definitely a push now, a lot of push from some of the bigger agents to try and develop artists, especially ones who are going to be making albums, to try and get them onto main stages of festivals, because that's the long-term goal. That's where the big money can be made. But I think every point that's been made so far has been really salient. I mean, it is an investment. It's a risk. But with that, quite often club promoters, it's more of, I wouldn't even say it's a heart sinking. It's like, oh, what are we going to be dealing with here? Because sometimes you've got artists who come through and they know what they're doing. They've brought the right team on board. And then there's sometimes where it's just really poorly thought through. You end up picking up so many extra costs, both sides, and it can be hideous. But really, if you want to know the power of an artist's ticket selling, their hard ticket value, a Tuesday night, 7 p.m. in Stoke, to paraphrase the football analogy, is where you really find if an artist is worth tickets, because you can hide an artist on a DJ bill, and that regularly happens. I'd say in the last 5 years, agents have become so good at that. Some artists have almost zero ticket value, but look great on lineups, whereas other artists have really taken that risk and proven themselves. And if you just look at the sort of, once you start seeing people selling 2, 3, 4, 5 Ali Pallies, it's actually incredible, because that what they've done is they've managed to capture an audience's, that they've built their audience and their brand, and you know, put their money where their mouth is. But I think as a promoter producing shows, at first it's quite daunting, because you're probably stepping in from, you know, turning up, pressing play on CDJ, right, we're ready to go. Suddenly it's a whole different world for a promoter, and there's a lot to think about. And having experience, I mean, I had early experience in live venues, so I started to realise there was a massive difference between a club show would be and a live show were. But now I think there's been a big merge right into the middle. And interestingly, some artists have ridden that really well. Some of them quite poorly. I mean, I did write down a few examples of acts. I won't talk about the poor ones, because I'm not that sort of person. But I mean, an interesting one is Calvin Harris, who started out really as a live act and switched into being a DJ, and found he rode that whole big EDM sort of world, but with albums behind him. That was an interesting sort of switch. You know, to some acts in the dance music sphere, they've never really DJed. I mean, Fred Again really is a really live entity as such, but might well not be seen as live as perhaps when Pendulum went from being DJs to the full band experience. I personally think if you're enhancing what you're doing, you're making music especially around albums, and you're there presenting it in a more engaging way. I don't think there is a right or wrong way to do it. I think ultimately you're trying to cultivate an audience. And I've worked recently with a drum and bass act who wanted to start creating their own brand. And even though it's still a DJ set, it's starting to merge in that sort of hybrid world. And what we've done is we've moved them off the normal club times, moved them to a daytime slot. We've introduced their singers. They make great albums. And we've introduced a visual and lighting element. We've pulled an amazing lighting team who are really very good at sort of lighting. And it's a low cost option, really, to suddenly take an artist from, you know, being on a 10 DJ bill to suddenly they're the only artist, they're the only act who plays on the day. And we know, having sold out a Coco, how many tickets they're now worth. That's been an investment for them. An investment for them financially, we didn't want to stress it, but they invested their time. They invested taking shows out of their diary to clear the space. And I think it's worked for them because it's picked their diary is filling up as DJs internationally because they have content which they can now push out there. So it's an interesting world. Sometimes it's done really, really well. I was at Royal Albert Hall for Max Cooper's show earlier this week, and it was phenomenal, absolutely out of this world. I have no idea where that would have landed financially. I think as a one-off show, it might have even cost the artist to do it. But that investment and into their artistry, which sometimes is people don't believe exists in electronic music, it really does. And I'm pleased to see some artists really riding the wave properly and doing it well. But yeah, so there's some very interesting artists out there who've proven their value in the live sphere.
The person that's not present on this call, I guess, is the fan, the ticket buying public, and ultimately their opinion matters most in some respect. And I think I'm interested to, you know, get your sense as a promoter, what the ticket price elasticity is like for a live show compared to a DJ show. I imagine you get agents that will tack on a live tax, and that will sometimes be absorbed by the consumer, but sometimes not. How do you measure that fan engagement around the live experience?
Well, the difference in the live world to club world is generally how the fee structures are placed. And in the live world, you base off a guarantee and then a percentage split, which is in many ways a lot more equitable and a lot, you know, the artist is technically in control of their budget. And for that reason, as long as you can find a fair sort of ground where the guarantee is and the expectation of turnout and ticket price, you're actually working to a parameter which is much fairer for both promoter, the artist, and, you know, hopefully the fan, although the fan will, you know, they vote with their feet if something's too expensive. In a club world, we have to take risks on fees, which sometimes you just look at it and go, wow, you know, there's no proof of value. And as I said, some acts quite cleverly hide behind these sort of fees. And then, you know, when people are going out, it's great. When we go through periods of, you know, the industry contracting, it can be very difficult to hit those sort of numbers. But yeah, live, you're working collaboratively in a collaborative sort of sense with the artist, the agent, and everybody involved. There's a lot more transparency. I mean, there's still this whole idea that, you know, the promoter's making, well, I suppose it's an industry-wide thing. Everybody's always making more money than you are. And in the back of your head, you know, everyone's skeptical. A good live P&L is very open, transparent, and, you know, it can be discussed at any point. In a DJ world, when they suddenly ask for their fourth bottle of Don Julio 1942, in the live sphere, they're probably paying somewhere between 80 and 90% to have that extra bottle. So funny enough, it's a lot easier to be fair on our riders when we're discussing live acts. So I actually prefer that world, but also I think what Kelly mentioned as well is we've actually started to see DJs acting more like live act without even doing a live show. the hard ticket kind of show. And some acts have done that really well. Sonny Federa is an example, is an artist who he doesn't particularly, I mean, there are visuals and that kind of thing, but there's no real live elements past, you know, him DJing there. But he rolls through like a live act. Tour manager, granted the smaller team and, you know, no real need for proper sort of backline. But there's some really interesting good examples where I think live music has taught electronic music how to act in a different way. The only downside sometimes is when an artist suddenly finds out they're worth 3,000 tickets when they come back to DJ next time. They want a lot more money, but I think that's the investment to progress themselves financially. And you know what? When you've got evidence that an artist is worth that, you're much more willing to sort of take the risk. The one thing I would say, and I've said this many, many a time, is that the support you get when it's an artist tour through their socials is very, very different from when it's just a DJ set. Mm. And sometimes as a promoter, I find it quite frustrating that we get nowhere near the sort of level on a festival or a club show of the support what we would like really to try and effectively sell tickets based off their name. But that's, again, that's from artist to artist. Some are very supportive, some are very, very aloof in terms of what they want to appear on their socials. And it's all about themselves. We all know that there's a lot of ego in this industry from every angle. When everything's all about themselves on a headline tour, funny enough, there's a lot more support. One other thing I think we should probably pick up on is the talk about the agent and promoter. There is a frustration that quite often we will build an artist from ground level as a club promoter, only for one of the big boys to come and take them for a live tour because they've got the promise of a major festival at the end of it. Be careful not to mention which festivals, because there is sometimes some frustration there. But there's also, and I'm seeing it more and more, there is loyalty with certain artists and they stay with promoters from the start to the end. Sometimes it means doing a co-pro with a major touring company, which is sometimes great because having people who are experienced in the live world and in the electronic world is a really good marriage of sort of understanding of how to market to different crowds in different ways. But yeah, I mean, I personally really like the live angle. Maybe I'm getting a bit older because, you know, those 10:30, 11 p.m. finishes instead of the 6 a.m. finishes are always a benefit too. But overall, you know, I'd say if it's done well, it could be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the word transparency quite a few times in that conversation. And I wondered and you also talked about the range and the kinds of shows you've seen, from live shows that are just DJ shows to very challenging shows. How does a manager like Kelly, build that trust with you that the show is going to be deliverable? Do you require a writer, a technical writer, for example, or would cost sheets of the rehearsal also help? Like, how do you kick the tires for a live show to kind of invest your time in it as well, make sure it's the right show?
So, I mean, the one thing which I think we probably forget as promoters is the prep work beforehand. We look at very much what happens on the day. But, you know, we agree on a costing sheet, effectively, which effectively covers all the sort of costs, from the venue costs, the production costs, and everything that's agreed in between. I think there's a good, strong understanding that on an involved live show that the artist is probably putting up costs, which if at any point, for instance, on a tour, if a couple of shows drop out, they're probably going to lose money because the margins are just so ridiculous. It's an industry where the margins are ridiculous on every side. And even venue side now, I think venues, the spiraling cost of venues, et cetera, and the push for real estate, which means that, you know, venues are regularly closing down because there's a nice block of flats which can replace them. We're all operating within quite crazy margins. But again, I think transparency, communication and trust, if you can build that, there's good relationships to build.
Fantastic. I'd also like to check if you've got any questions for Tom or Kelly, or Kelly, if you've got any questions for Pete or Tom. No?
Well, I mean, for my end, I think it's very interesting to hear it from another perspective because, you know, I think sometimes we just think, we're getting ripped off as promoters. People think everyone's, as I say, everybody thinks everyone's making millions of pounds. And quite often we're all in this crazy industry because we actually, we started listening to music at a young age and wanted to be part of it. And I think for that reason, you know, the creative industries, there obviously is there's regularly an exploitative kind of nature to them, especially when the corporates come in and try and get what we've kind of created. But on the whole, generally, I work with a lot of people from artists, agents, managers who just love being part of culture and delivering on it.
That's amazing. I think I've taken a lot from this conversation today. I think being prepared is one, starting early is another. And I think there's a lot of space for different, I think, modalities of what a live show could be. And I think, Pete, you gave some really good examples of how those shows can scale and be successful. I'd like to thank you for listening to the AFM Industry Insider podcast, and thank you to Tom, Kelly and Pete today for joining us. I'd also like to thank This Is Distorted for producing the AFM Industry Insider podcast. Please remember to like and subscribe, and we will see you next time. Thanks very much.
This is the AFEM Industry Insider
podcast from the Association for Electronic Music.